More than 11 million women lost their jobs in North America between February and May 2020. Cibele Carazana explains the losses erased decades of job gains by women in the labor force. She goes on to say about 8% of the women who lost their jobs stand zero chance of being called back to work. Heidi Shearholz, a senior economist and director of policy at the Economic Policy Institute, agrees. She says there's a very real possibility many of those jobs lost by women will never come back. It is a shocking loss of employment and representation of women in the labor market. According to Carazana, in January, when unemployment was just 3.6%, which was among the lowest recorded rates in the last 60 years, women were the majority of the workforce. And then, within weeks, that all changed. Carazana reports, in 1958, women made up less than one-third of the labor market, and it took 30 years to reach 45%, a pace of growth that she says ushered in the most significant change in labor markets in the past century. The job losses cross all sectors, less so in management, but even there, women were more likely to cut back or lose their job. Carazana says the realities of the lopsided division of care inside homes has been on full display since the pandemic hit. Women in 2020 still take on the overwhelming majority of child care. And then add in child care facilities that started to close. It was a double hit. One in four women in childcare lost their jobs, and without childcare, more women either had no choice or opted to stay at home to look after their children. I invited Cibele Carazana of the 19th to join me for a conversation that matters about the devastating impact of COVID-19 on women and the employment realities that are crippling them professionally and financially today, and will have impacts for decades to come.
Conversations That Matter is a partner program of the Center for Dialogue at Simon Fraser University. The production of this program is made possible thanks to the following and viewers like you. Please become a patron at conversationsthatmatter.tv.
Cibele Carazana, thank you for joining me for this episode of Conversations That Matter. I read your article about America's first female recession, and I have to tell you, I was devastated because, look at me. I'm an older white guy. I'm not a woman. I'm not living in the kinds of conditions of the people who, as you have pointed out, are the most affected. And it really bothered me that we're still at this point where there's this great occupational divide, as you so appropriately put it. What was it that sort of turned you onto this story that made you say, hang on a second, we've got a problem here. We need to identify it. And then let's also, discuss that. But then what are some of the things that we can do moving forward so that hopefully this doesn't happen when there's another downturn in the economy?
So one of the things that was really shocking when you started to look at the numbers that were coming in this year in terms of economic numbers were that was the impact on sectors that really are sectors that are female dominated and how different that was from previous recessions. I think really the difference that we were looking at between this year and 2008, 2009 during the Great Recession, the recession in the early 2000s, the 90s, even the 80s, all of those recessions typically affected jobs held by men, A, because men were a larger part of the workforce in those years too, but also because many of those fields that were hit the hardest, construction, manufacturing, typically those are industries that are dominated by men. And so what was different this year, which was quite startling, was that many of the fields that were affected were fields that are more vulnerable to social distancing, right? So fields like hospitality, retail, all of those jobs that went away at the beginning of the year, those were jobs that are dominated by women. And so we had this sort of three-part problem, right? Where A, women here in America were one in three women were essential workers. So they were more likely to be on the front lines. The rest of them were more likely to get laid off. And then if you did keep your job, if you did go home and work remote, then you had this childcare crisis, right? That so many places are dealing with, where you had to make difficult decisions about taking care of your children or being able to be a productive, member at work. And so this sort of three-part punch was really what was hitting women really, really hard this year. In terms of solutions, in terms of looking forward, you know, I think we've really come to understand how the safety net was already weak, what was already in place, particularly when we look at the childcare industry. That's an industry that has been hurt and hurting for many, many years, but there was not a lot of attention paid to it. And so now when everyone is at home and seeing that this problem is a very real problem, suddenly we're all attuned to it and aware of it and wanting to address it. And so I think we'll likely see some effect there and some hopefully some policy moving forward to address some of the issues with childcare in particular. And then also we're likely to see more flexibility moving forward now with more people working remotely. And that's something that particularly working moms have been fighting for a long time, to have that flexibility. We think companies are going to be more likely to offer that.
Okay, that's for people who are, for women who are working in more of a office kind of environment where they're not in the direct service sector, that they can continue to work remotely. For so many of the women that you point out in your article, that's not an option. They still have to go to work. And in doing so, they're leaving their children at work. They're putting themselves at risk because the coronavirus hasn't gone away. And we, you know, we don't have a vaccine, nor do we really have appropriate therapeutics at the moment to be able to address the disease should you get it. So there, I like how you point out the fact that there is this childcare challenge that affects all mothers, but especially those who are single providers within their family.
Yeah, that's the other reality that we're seeing right now. There is a situation in which we are starting to see women leave the labor force, because the reality is in most heterosexual traditional couples, women are still doing the majority of the childcare at home, and they're reducing their hours 4 to 5 times more than fathers, even though, you know, both parents might be at home. And so that is an issue that is affecting a lot of families and causing some women to decide, you know, I cannot balance both of these things. And, you know, my children take precedence over my work. But those are families where that choice is even available. And there are many, many families where that choice is not an option, particularly when we look at women of color. They're more likely to be single breadwinners in their families. They're more likely to have less savings to fall back on. And so there is not really an option there to say, you know, I'm going to stop working. And that's a problem that is systemic, that has been around for a very long time. There are a lot of barriers there that we'll need to overcome to break that down. But the reality is, particularly women of color, they just do not have that safety net that white women or more affluent women can turn to in this time.
I was disturbed when I saw some of the statistics that you had in your article about women of color who lose their jobs, and the likelihood of them being called back to work was next to zero, versus their male counterparts who may be distressed by some of the economic repercussions of the response to COVID-19. But for women, especially women of color, it really hits them hard.
Yeah, when we're looking at the figures in terms of the jobs that are, you have a zero possibility of even returning to work, that figure is around 8% for women compared to 6.4% for men. And again, that is because of occupational segregation, right? So the jobs that women are in compared to the jobs that men are typically in. Men are more likely to be in managerial positions. They're more likely to be in those jobs that just have a little bit of cushion, right? The ones that are more likely to stick around. The vulnerability in the jobs that women are in, particularly now when we combine it with a health crisis, means that many of them might be called back to work, but they might be called back at reduced hours. We're starting to see that already, particularly in the hospitality field, where we started to see a little bit of a rebound in June and July, but that rebound is very precarious. We don't know if those jobs will go away again. And so that's kind of this paralyzing position that a lot of women are in, where they are hoping to be called back, might have already been called back, but they don't know how long that stability is going to last and whether that stability will crumble.
It's particularly shocking when we take a look at what where the economy was back in January. In the United States, there was, you know, overemployment, or the economy was literally on fire. There weren't enough people to fill jobs. And within a matter of months, we're in this situation where women are taking the brunt of this. What do we do? I know that you talk about this occupational divide. How do we collectively as a society start to address this so that we can ensure that as we move forward, we're not going to find ourselves in this same situation? And I know that as I ask that question, there isn't an easy answer, but it's something that I think that we have to collectively understand and embrace.
There is no easy answer. And like you said, if we put this all in the context of where we were prior to this moment, I think it's quite startling. I mean, in December 2019, women had surpassed men as the largest portion of the labor force here in the United States for only the second time in history. Women had started to participate at a higher levels in the work in the 1970s. And so when we reached December 2019, women get to the point where they're 50.04% of the labor force. They surpass men. In 3 months, we lost a decade of progress. And so the reason that happens is again, this occupational segregation that we're talking about, where the fields that women are predominantly in. And it's a concern that we need to take very, very seriously when we look ahead, when we look at what that means for the gender pay gap, at what that means for when a minimum wage pushes coming down the pike, and when we just look at the role that women play in our society. And so, again, there is not really a simple answer to this, but it's looking more at the way that our labor force is constructed and the reasons why we keep women in these jobs and don't promote jobs. I mean, it's really a sort of institutional problem, right, of why we got here and why we keep women in these jobs and there's not enough representation. And when we think about representation in particular, representation in Congress, representation even in the economics field, there's a figure that I think is quite startling. Of the 408 economists in the board of the Federal Reserve, only one is a Black woman. And so when you look at those figures and you realize even here in 2020, we are just not at a point where women are represented, where they are in positions of leadership, where they can speak up about these issues before it becomes a problem, right? Childcare would not have been on the back burner if there were more women in positions of leadership who could have spoken up about this before. And unfortunately, the people who are there are not necessarily taking these issues and seeing them as issues that are important until it affects everyone. And so that's part of what we're seeing now. Suddenly everybody is aware of this because everyone is feeling it.
You know as well as I do, there are going to be some people who say, well, okay, this is the way that things play out. People get hurt when there are downturns. But I can't help but think that we all get hurt, because when we have a robust and diverse economy and cultures that are not just within communities but within the companies that we work in, more and more people get to realize their potential. And when that happens, everybody benefits. You know, Aristotle had at one point said the responsibility of all of us as fully functioning adults is to realize our potential, because a failure to do so is a loss not just to the individual, but to all of society. And so I think that you have pinpointed an issue that is fundamentally important if we want to realize our potential as a country and as a society.
Absolutely. I mean, if you look at the role that women have played just in the past few decades, when they became a larger part of the labor force, they drove so much of the economic benefits that we saw in the 20th century and going into the 21st century now. I mean, the numbers are there. This is not a secret. It's not something that we even need to wonder about. When you have more diversity, when you have more representation, that bears out in the economic figures, that bears out in how prosperous we can be as a society. And there are numerous studies about just what people bring to a workplace, to an economy, when you have diversity, when you have representation. The reality is you're just going to be able to understand these issues at a larger level and be able to help more people. And so it's again, it's not a mystery, and we already know that it bears out in the numbers. And I think the point that we might learn from this recession is that we finally need to really pay close attention to that. So this doesn't happen again.
So one of the other points that you brought up in your article that I found once again disturbing, and I know that I'm using that word a bit too often, but until you start to think about it, you don't realize what the impact is. And that is that for young women who are just now starting to enter the workforce, they are going to have lost some of the gains that women in the workforce had been able to achieve. And so their entry point is lower, and the impact on their career can last for decades.
Yeah, so we've seen this in prior recessions. This also should not, again, so many of these things are not necessarily a mystery or new. It's just when you put them into this context, you really start to realize what the impact is. And so that's one of the big keys. Any student who graduates the year of a recession or the year after a recession, usually in that time period, is going to feel the effect of that way, way into their career, years into the career. And so we have seen studies that have looked at students who have graduated after recessions in the past. There's one that looked at students from 1974 to 2011. So quite a huge swath there in terms of folks entering the labor force. And it found that students that entered the labor force that year could expect to receive a salary that was 10% lower than they would have had there not been a recession that year. And those losses follow them into their first decade in the labor force. That impact particularly hits lower wage jobs more so than it does at jobs at the higher level, highly skilled jobs that have, again, a little bit more of a cushion and don't feel it as hard as these other jobs. And again, women are unfortunately dominating in these low wage jobs. Of the 40 lowest paid jobs in the US, women make up 2/3 of that labor force. And so it's just a reality, again, of this segregation, this focus of women in these lower paid jobs that do not have the ability to weather these storms.
Then you add in the fact that access to unemployment funding or government assistance is sporadic and challenging. It all adds up to not just being an economic issue, but there are psychological and emotional challenges that come with it. When you talk to some of the women in your article, where are they at from a emotional and psychological point of view?
So mental health is something that came up again and again, speaking to women across the country about what they were dealing with in this moment. I spoke to one mother in Texas who spoke to me about, she had her dream job lined up in the middle of this pandemic. They offered her a job in March and she had to turn that down. And then she also had this other position that she was working in that she also left. And so she was finding herself for the first time in her life out of the labor force. Her husband was a doctor. He was the primary breadwinner in their family, and he was, working with coronavirus patients. So she had this thought of, my husband is the hero. He's the one saving lives, but I am the one who's both a terrible worker and a terrible mom because I'm the one who's at home with my kids trying to juggle these two things that I ultimately cannot balance. And so she made the decision to leave the workforce. And for her, that was very difficult because her job is part of who she is. It's not, these things are not separate. And it's what gives her autonomy and it's what gives her independence and what's something that's very important to her and to, I think, to a lot of women. And so for her, it was a question of how will the choices that I made this year because of COVID-19 follow me into the future? And that was really a trend that we heard for many women who think that, they've been able to reach this position where they have this autonomy, where they have been able to both be a good parent, a good partner, and also involved in their community and also in these jobs that were fulfilling for them. And having to think about, what gives this year? My husband, in most of these cases, and the reality is they continue to tend to make more money than their wives, are in positions that they cannot lose their job. My children are not going to stop going to school. And so the thing that gives is me. And that, I think, has been very difficult for a lot of women who have never been in that position And so mental health is something that came out over and over again about how am I going to get through this?
Well, even for women who are able to keep their job but look after their children at home, and they're able to keep the job because they can work remotely, I noted that you point out that many of them put their work, their paid employment, aside until late into the evening so they can attend to the needs of their children. And so being productive at work becomes more challenging. That adds stress, and that stress then ripples out through the rest of their day. Everybody is affected by this, and so it's an extremely challenging situation. Just because you can work remotely doesn't necessarily mean that you can address this, especially with uncertainty as the new school year is approaching.
That's the really key part, right? Many economists have said we do not have a recovery this year if we do not address childcare and schools. The reality is these things can work if your kids can be sent somewhere, but you cannot be working from home. You cannot be remote and have to also deal with your children and take care of them at home. You know, some of the moms we spoke to, there's one that sticks in my mind from Miami, Florida, who said, I got to my computer at 10 o'clock at night and I was working till 2 or 3 in the morning. I had pulled all-nighters. I mean, it just was not a sustainable way to live, and it didn't work for a month, and it certainly does not work for an entire school year, right? And so, again, we talked about the childcare issue, and we've lost, you know, 1 in 5 childcare providers have lost their jobs this year. The schools, it's a whole patchwork of regulations in terms of what the districts are doing in terms of returning to school, partially returning to school, having kids fully remote. You know, these are oftentimes women and who are making the decision of, I can't even decide what is going to happen in a month or two with work. Should I take a consulting job? Should I take a part-time job? What should I do? I can't decide because we have not solved this childcare issue and this issue of children returning to school.
Well, you have to continue to do your important work too, which is to shine a light on this so that it becomes top of mind.
Yeah, we believe that every issue is a woman's issue, right? The problem is that we just never look at it that way. And so that's where we come in.
Great. Thank you very much. Nice to meet you.
Thank you.